You are listening to The Dolphin Pod, brought to you by the Dolphin Communication Project and Tiny Cow Studios. Hi, I'm Justin Gregg, your host for The Dolphin Pod. In this week's episode, we will review breaking dolphin news from around the world, focus our science spotlight on dolphin personalities, and in our Kids Science Quickie, we'll discuss dolphin mittens. And now,
Dolphin Pod News Highlights.
Dolphin saves stranded whales. Moko, a lone sociable dolphin living off the coast of New Zealand, purportedly saved two stranded pygmy sperm whales. Malcolm Smith, a local conservation officer, had attempted to push the stranded whales back into deeper water multiple times, but to no avail. When Moko arrived on the scene, however, the whales apparently followed her past a dangerous sandbar and out into the open ocean. While it is unlikely that Moko gave the whales specific instructions to follow her to safety, it certainly appears that her presence was instrumental in helping save these two whales from certain death. Banish the Bags Campaign. The Daily Mail, a UK-based newspaper, has launched a campaign to banish the use of plastic bags in Britain, citing the horrendous environmental damage that discarded bags cause. Dolphins and other marine animals, as well as land-based animals and birds, regularly eat or become entangled in discarded plastic bags, leading to a slow and agonizing death due to starvation or suffocation. The Daily Mail is petitioning the UK government and local chain stores to implement an outright ban on bags, or at the very least to begin a scheme to charge customers for the use of plastic bags as a means of reducing the number of bags that end up in circulation. Thanks to the campaign, many retailers and supermarkets have already begun pledging to reduce the number of plastic bags that they distribute. In this week's Science Spotlight, we will be discussing dolphin personalities. For this episode, I interview Dr. Stan Kuchai. Dr. Kuchai is a professor of psychology at the University of Southern Mississippi, where he's the director of the Marine Mammal Behavior and Cognition Program at USM. He was kind enough to join us today so we could discuss his research into dolphin personalities. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Kuchai.
It's my pleasure, Justin.
To start off with, can you tell us how scientists go about defining personality and how this would differ from the definition of temperament?
Temperament and personality are often confused, even in the literature. Temperament should mean an individual's behavioral tendencies that are present at birth. And so these could be caused by some genetic influence or perhaps by some aspect of the prenatal environment. But the key thing is that these predispositions are there at birth or shortly thereafter. Personality is typically defined as an individual's enduring behavioral tendencies that remain relatively constant across time and over various situations. They should also distinguish that individual from other individuals. And so the basic idea is that temperament provides the foundation for later personality. And so that temperament, these characteristics that are present at birth, interact with experience to produce an individual's personality.
So it's the case that, you know, someone could be born, a human in this case, with a slightly aggressive temperament. But then depending on their environment and how they grow up and how things work out, they could grow up to be more aggressive or less aggressive, and then that would be stable across time through their life.
Yes. Now, and again, the notion of stability, I think, is also a tricky one. I like the phrase relatively stable a little bit better, just because none of us are perfectly predictable. And I happen to think that's a good thing. So even though we say that there's stability, we're talking about relative stability rather than absolute stability.
When a scientist is then studying personalities, how do they go about assessing personalities? I mean, we'll start out with humans because psychologists have been studying human personality for a while. So how do they assess personality?
Well, there are two main techniques that are used. One is what's called the rating method. And this is where, for example, if you're a human, you would take a personality test, and then an individual who knew how to score that test then would rate your personality in terms of various dimensions. The most common theory that's used in human personality analysis called the five-factor theory. And so if you took a personality test, it would tell you where you fell on each of these five dimensions. One of them, for example, is openness to experience, and that's exactly what it sounds like. Someone who scored high on openness to experience would be very curious, have very broad interests, might be prone to risk-taking, and so on. Someone who was low on this would be very, very cautious, very leery of new things, and so on. And so it's where you fall on these dimensions that would allow somebody to rate your personality. And the same technique is used with animals. People devise questionnaires, which humans then fill out, rating animals that they know well, and then those are scored and interpreted in terms of whatever dimensions the scientists are interested in. The other approach is the coding method, and this is where you actually look at an animal's actual behavior and then code it in terms of specified personality characteristics. So, for example, if you're interested in looking at individual differences and how bold or curious an octopus was, what you might do is put different objects in a tank with an octopus, see how it reacted to those objects, and then look for how those reactions differ from those of other octopi, and then that would allow you to rate them differently on that dimension.
Is a coding method that's also used when studying humans, or is that just for animals?
Yes. It's used studying humans, more so, I think, with young children than with adults.
Is that because they can speak? As an adult, you can speak, so it's easier to rate in that sense.
Well, they can speak better. They can understand instructions better on personality tests and so on. But also, it's easier to find children in structured situations, at, the daycare or a school or so on. And so look at them at in the classroom. On the playground, what have you. And it's a little bit more difficult to find those sorts of contexts for adults.
So when people are studying personality in animals, and as I understand it, this is a relatively new direction to be taking, how easily does the models that we've created for humans, how do they transfer when you're starting to study animals? Is this problematic?
No, that's a very good question. It is a bit problematic because obviously humans and animals do differ, but the five-factor model, which I mentioned earlier, has been used to assess personality in a wide range of animals, now ranging from guppies to elephants. And what people have found, of course, is that not all dimensions work equally well for all animals. I think most people studying animal personality now, including the work that we've done, use the five-factor model as a starting point. I mean, we're not trying to force dolphins into the five-factor model. We were just using it as a way to begin our assessment of dolphin personality.
Is that presumably because at the moment there is no standardized test for either animals in general or specific species, so you have to turn to something?
Exactly. There has to be a starting point.
Mm. So, there are lots of people who, of course, knee-jerk reaction, reject this sort of thing and say you shouldn't be applying a human model to an animal and it's anthropomorphic and isn't there some other way to study this? I mean, these are objections you probably hear quite a bit. How would you, what is your response to that sort of objection?
It's anthropomorphic if we are unjustifiably attributing human characteristics to animals. That's what we want to avoid. And again, I don't think anybody who's studying animal personality is trying to equate any non-human species with human personality. Again, it's being comparative psychologists or comparative biologists, we want to be able to compare our results across species. Not only do I want to know what dolphin personality is like and how that influences their behavior, but I also want to be able to compare the types of personalities we see in dolphins with personalities that people see in other species, be that hyenas, elephants, what have you. Mm. And so that's, I think, one reason people try to use these models is that they provide, at least at the beginning, a standard comparison point.
So it's somewhere to start from and go forward and develop the field. Mm-hmm. You've recently published an article that you co-wrote with Lauren Highfill, appearing in the journal Aquatic Mammals in last year, 2007. And you described the first study of personality in dolphins. So can you describe how you set up experiments in order to assess dolphin personalities?
of course, what we did was use the rating method. So we devised a 30-item questionnaire, which asked people that knew the dolphins really well to rate each dolphin independently, where it fell on one of these dimensions, like curiosity, aggressive, things like that. And then we ended up with personality scores. And what we found was that there were individual differences among the dolphins. It wasn't the case that there was a type of dolphin personality. The dolphins were as different from one another as humans seem to be. So, lots of different personality types.
So it's not the case that all the dolphins you saw were curious or shy or scared. They were different.
And that's exactly right. They were not all equally curious. That was one area in which they did differ. And curiously, that seems to be the one area in which mothers and calves seem to be most alike. Now, we did not find much evidence that a calf's personality mirrored its mother's personality, but this openness to experience, this curiosity dimension, was one in which there did seem to be a relationship.
Does that suggest, assuming the mother and calf spend a lot of time together, that specifically curiosity is something that may depend on learning as they're developing? So they may learn to be curious from their mom?
That's an excellent question. And that takes us back to our earlier discussion of temperament and personality. One thing we don't know enough about is what the calves' temperaments were like at the very beginning.
So you can only speculate.
We can only speculate. My guess is it's an interaction, but also I think the mother may play a very important role in terms of facilitating her calf's curiosity or inhibiting it. And that may be what we're seeing in this relationship. And again, it's not a perfect correlation at all, but there does seem to be some sort of relationship there.
So assuming you knew the relationship between these different dolphins, whether or not they were related, brothers, sisters, cousins, mothers, sons, from what you're describing, it sounds like this mirrors what we know about humans as well. When you test humans, brothers and sisters, in terms of personality factors, they aren't necessarily scoring the same because they have, close genetic makeup. Is that the same for dolphins, it seems?
That seems to be the case, exactly. Kin are no more similar to one another. And again, we have very limited data at this point, so I'm making a pretty sweeping generalization here. But from our data, it doesn't seem to be the case, except for that one dimension of openness to experience, again, it doesn't seem to be the case that kin are any more similar to one another in terms of these personality characteristics than non-related animals are.
And how many dolphins were involved in this in the first phase of this study?
16 at the very beginning.
And so that leads me to my next question, which is, because you were testing to see if these personalities that you saw in the first phase, if they were stable across time. So how did you go about assessing that?
Well, we had planned just to wait a while and to go back and see what happened in a year or 2 years or 5 years or what have you. But Hurricane Katrina intervened and destroyed the facility that these animals were housed at. 8 of the animals actually were in a pool at Marine Life Oceanarium when Katrina hit. This is a pool that had survived Hurricane Camille, which up until Katrina was the standard for horrible hurricanes in Mississippi. This pool did not survive Katrina, and so the dolphins were washed out to sea, and I mean, nobody knew if they were alive or not. The other 8 animals had been taken to other facilities that they thought for temporary housing until the hurricane passed. That turned out to be more permanent. About 2 weeks after the hurricane came through Mississippi, the dolphins were spotted as a group very close to where the oceanarium had been, and they were subsequently rescued and rehabilitated. And all in 15 of the 16 animals, the 16th was kept in Florida for health reasons, but 15 of the other animals were moved to a facility in the Bahamas. And so what we were able to do is, after they had been in the Bahamas for a while and the people there got to know them, we asked them to rate the animals using the same scale we had used in the earlier phase of the study.
So these are different people, I assume, not the same people who had rated the first time.
Exactly. Different people who had never seen the results of the original ratings, had never done the ratings before, So we got ratings of the 15 animals, and this is approximately 9 months after they had moved to the Bahamas, about 14 months after Hurricane Katrina came through. So a fair amount of time had passed. The dolphins had been through, you know, many, many, many changes, including the destruction of their home, being moved to various locations. And we were very pleased when the results came through, and we found that 13 of the 15 animals had very, very similar personalities across this incredible change in context and across this length of time.
So they had similar ratings to their previous rating the first time.
Yes, their ratings were virtually identical in the two contexts. So that suggested to us that, okay, dolphin personality, at least in terms of these ratings, is stable across time and over situations.
That's a fairly impressive finding.
We thought so.
Yeah.
We liked it. Now, again, one thing that we weren't able to do because the animals moved is one thing that, you know, I keep emphasizing that this was, we used the rating method here. We also wanted to code the animals' behaviors to see if what we saw in terms of their actual behavior reflected what we saw in these ratings. And that's something that we're trying to do with other groups of dolphins now, is to compare human ratings with the animal's actual behavior. I think that's a key step in increasing our understanding of dolphin personality.
I'm curious, thinking about this, these are dolphins who probably spend a lot of time with each other in the same kind of environments, and yet you're seeing these different personalities for the individuals right within the group. What do you expect if you were to do the similar kind of test on wild dolphins, if this is possible? What do you expect to find there? Because these are presumably wild dolphins in a much more variable environment, less stable. So, you know, do you expect to find greater personality differences individually?
Yes, and for exactly the reasons that you stated. I think they have a more varied environment. They have a more varied social environment and a much more varied physical environment. And because of that, I think we will find greater differences. Now, the hard part there is going to be looking for stability over time. Now, the nice thing is that there are groups of scientists who have studied individual groups of animals for 20 to 30 years now in some locations, mm-hmm. and they know their animals really well. And so what we're going to do is have ratings done for those animals, and in some cases we'll have two or three generations of animals, which would be really nice. I'm always knowing who the mother is, rarely knowing who the father is, of course. And so we can look at that relatedness issue again in the wild and see if that it may be the case that maybe animals are more similar in the wild than they are in captivity. I don't think that will be the case, but that's an open question right now. And the other thing we'll be able to do then is to relate these ratings of personality with the animal's actual behavior, because, you know, these groups have collected, you know, scores and scores of behavioral data on their animals. So I'm excited about that.
Do you plan to do something similar to what you had done before with captive dolphins as well? Do what you tried done the first time, which is introduce the coding as well as the ratings for the five factor?
Yes. There are a few facilities that we're doing that with right now. They've volunteered to do the ratings, and then we're developing the coding scheme so that we can try and compare those. So I'm hoping in the next few years we'll have a nice data set which will allow us to look at both ratings and codings of behavior in both captive situations and in wild situations.
The study of personality in dolphins and in animals in general, do you see that this is gaining popularity? Is this becoming an interesting question for scientists more so than it was maybe 20 years ago?
Well, you have to acknowledge that I'm a little biased in my answer here. but yes, I think it is. There's a psychologist at the University of Texas in Austin named Sam Gosling, who has done a tremendous amount of work on animal personality per se, and I think has led the charge to validate the study of animal personality. I mean, everybody has recognized for a long time that individual animals are different. That's not been an issue. The issue has really been is how are these differences strictly due to them reacting to their environment, or are they due to some sort of personality characteristic? And we're starting to see now, as we get more and more data on more and more species, that there lots of species seem to have something that, if it's not personality, it certainly looks like personality.
So do you think, as we study dolphin and animal personality, this is going to change the way that animal behavior scientists approach questions, approach the data that they're looking at, and think about animal behavior in a general sense?
Maybe. I think it depends a little bit on the question. I mean, one thing that we're hoping, and that I think is very important, is that we stop thinking that all dolphins are the same, for example. And that's just not the case. And so when we say dolphins do X, Y, or Z, that may be true. Like, for example, we say dolphins echolocate. Okay, dolphins echolocate. That's probably true of all dolphins, at least all normal dolphins. Mm. But how dolphins react in a stressful social situation probably depends a bit on their personality as well as their history in those situations. And I think the more we recognize the fact that individual differences, and consistent individual differences a la personality, influence animal behavior, the better our understanding of each species will be. So I think it's critical that we do pay attention to this when we try and both ask and answer questions about animals and their behavior.
Hmm. So when we're thinking about dolphin personalities and different personalities for individuals within a species, this does present some problems when you're talking about evolutionary theory and discussing how do these stable personality types develop at the same time you have individual flexibility. Can you speak a bit about that? Because I know that must be a challenge in some way.
Well, one of the problems with the study of personality from an evolutionary point of view has been that it's been difficult to explain. I mean, and one of the reasons has been that certain personality differences might in fact be maladaptive. So, for example, a prey animal that's really curious might find itself, you know, in the grasp of a predator more often than a prey animal that's very cautious. Okay, and so the question has always been, well, why would curiosity or boldness or openness to experience and ever develop is a personality dimension in a prey animal? And so that's been, and that's sort of been the issue, because it would seem that individual behavioral flexibility might be something that would have been selected for more than stable personality differences. And now there's been some recent work in which people have tried to explain how personality might have evolved. A recent paper in Science by Wolf and colleagues looked at the trade-off between current and future reproductive strategies. And they argued that an emphasis on current reproduction results in more risk-taking, whereas emphasis on future reproduction results in more risk aversion. And that these differences in risk-taking behavior are stable over time and across situations, which is the definition of personality. The Wolf et al. Model accounts for the evolution of one aspect of animal personality, that is risk-taking behaviors. And they suggest that these stable individual differences that constitute personality result in behavioral flexibility for the species, and that's very important. That allows or increases the chances that the species will survive. But again, we're still ignoring individual flexibility. And so one of the things we're trying to sort out is, you know, how important is individual flexibility versus stable personality characteristics, species flexibility. And it may be that there are significant species differences in that regard. That is, some species may have both. Humans, primates, dolphins, for example, seem to have both stable personality characteristics and at least some degree of individual flexibility. Other species may have neither. As far as we can tell, ants and spiders are pretty low on both individual flexibility and on individual personality characteristics. And other species will fall in between these two extremes. And so that once we know more about where species fall in terms of how much weight was placed on personality characteristics versus individual flexibility, I think that'll help us better understand how personality evolved.
So when we're talking about these two factors, personality types and individual flexibility, in something like a human, which may be very complicated, or possibly a dolphin, which of those two do you think is more important for either the species or the individual?
Well, I think that's a very good question. For individual survival, I have to think that individual flexibility is more important. If you can adapt to different situations, you're more likely to survive than if you have a less flexible way of dealing with change. And so that's going to increase the chance that you're going to reproduce. Now, for the species, it may be the case that differences in personality increase the behavioral flexibility of the species as a whole, and so that increases the chances that some members of the species will survive and reproduce, and so the species will go on. Now, which is more important overall? That's a tough question. That's one that hopefully in the next few years we'll have an answer to.
Tough questions are always the good questions.
I agree. They're certainly the fun questions.
They are. So you see that this, you obviously are interested in this field, but this field could be important as the science of animal behavior progresses. Do you find that there's going to be more and more people entering in, at the university level, studying under people like yourself who are interested in personality? Do you see that happening?
I certainly hope so. I do see an increased interest in the study of animal personality, both in terms of, people I meet at conferences and the number of articles that get published each year on different species. So I think it is a growing field. It's a very exciting field. And I think the more that we can relate personality ratings to actual behavior, the more advances we're going to make.
Do you think that down the road, either because this is an explicit goal or because it will just happen this way, do you think that the five-factor model will be replaced by an all-encompassing model for animals in general or for specific species that will allow for comparison between species? Do you think that will happen?
I think as we gather more data, what we'll find is that some of these dimensions will be applicable for some species but not for others. And I think we'll end up devising personality profiles which are unique for each species. And what will be interesting will be to see what the commonalities are that hold across various species and what the differences are.
And so there should be also a large scale so that you can say objectively and scientifically, this species has these kinds of personality traits more so than this, or you'll find curiosity ranks higher in a general sense for this species, but not this species.
Right, and it may be the case, exactly as you said that, it may be the case that species will differ in terms of how much variability they show for a given personality dimension. Well, let's take openness to experience, for example. It may be the case that one species might vary a great deal on that dimension, and other species might vary just a tiny bit, if at all. And as we get more information, that will be a very interesting thing to find out.
So how might a casual observer, so someone on an eco-tour or visiting their local aquarium, observe differences in dolphin behavior that may be attributed to personality? What would they see?
Well, again, keep in mind the difficulty with attributing personality is that you want to make sure that the differences you see are consistent. And so on a short visit, that will probably be difficult to do. But having said that, they can certainly look, and my guess is at almost any facility, they will be able to observe different patterns of behavior exhibited by different animals. Some animals will be more curious. Some will actually be more interested in humans than others. Some will be more likely to stay by another dolphin's side. So that you can, I would just look for behavioral differences. And my guess is that many visitors likely attribute personality characteristics to different animals they see spontaneously without even thinking that they're doing so.
Mm. So the key really is when you're seeing a dolphin that is maybe shy in the corner, it might not be that its personality is shy. It might just be ill that day. So you have to really look long-term for stable personality traits. You can't just, see a dolphin once and know its personality.
Right, right. I mean, you can see it once, and that gives you a spotlight on that instant of the dolphin's life. It's important to keep in mind that having, a limited set of information like that is not the ideal way to assess personality. We want to see how an animal behaves over time in a variety of situations.
Which is exactly what your study attempted to do and managed to do quite well, in fact.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Justin.
Always happy to flatter. So.
Good. That's a good trait.
That's right. Hopefully it's stable. Although, as I get old and ornery, I don't know if...
Oh, you never can tell with that old ornery thing, yeah.
Great. Well, Are there places that you are aware of on the web where people can go to look up more information on animal personalities, whether or not they're just interested in reading a book or an article, or they want to get into this as a career? Where should they go?
Well, I think, number one, Google is a great resource. So they just Google in animal personality to find out probably more than they want to know, and some sites they probably don't care about. But the other thing to do is to go to the University of Texas at Austin website and look up Sam Gosling. He has a wonderful website on animal personality, which will give people a great foundation and a really nice basic understanding of what is currently known and what's currently happening in the field of animal personality.
Excellent. Well, I'll put links up to Gosling's webpage, as well as to information about your research lab and your work with personality.
That'd be great.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to speak with us about dolphin personalities.
It was my pleasure, Justin. I enjoyed it.
And now, a science quickie for kids.
The ancestors of dolphins were four-legged land-based animals who walked the earth many millions of years ago. Over the course of evolution, their bodies slowly adapted to life in the oceans, drastically altering their once familiar dog-like appearance. Dolphins evolved a brand new blowhole structure on the top of their heads in order to help them breathe, and what was once their nose, with two nostrils, became a new kind of structure that helps them create clicking sounds that they use for echolocation. You can see evidence of dolphins' land-based history by looking at the bones in their pectoral fins. Even though the pectoral fin is shaped a lot like a paddle, the bones that make up the fin still retain the structure of their ancestors. You can easily see what look like five fingers and a wrist. It's almost as if dolphins evolved a giant mitten over their hands to help them steer in the water. To see an image of the bones in a dolphin's flipper, visit www.thedolphinpod.com. We had quite a few correct answers to last week's quiz, and our winner, chosen at random, is Brooke, who correctly stated that humpback whales have two openings to their blowhole, whereas bottlenose dolphins have only one. Now for this week's quiz. Name a part of the body that you will see in the first few months of a developing dolphin embryo that you won't find on a dolphin calf when it is born. Think you know the answer? Surf on over to thedolphinpod.com and click on Dolphin Quiz. Leave your answers in the comments section. Winners will be randomly chosen from the correct answers and will be announced on next week's show. That's it for this week's edition of the Dolphin Pod. Thanks for tuning in. If you would like more information about the stories from this week's episode, check out thedolphinpod.com. If you've got questions or comments about this week's podcast, please contact us through the website. Why not consider signing up for the Dolphin Communication Project's online community? You'll get access to a forum where you can discuss the Dolphin Pod with other listeners. The DCP website offers a chance to adopt one of our dolphins from the Bahamas, as well as learn more about volunteer, internship, and ecotour opportunities. Don't forget to join us next week for more dolphin science news and information. And remember, the Dolphin Pod is only a click away.